In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast, hypoxia for fat loss, how to fix golfer's elbow or climber's elbow, how to keep from retaining water with creatine, can your fascia store toxins, urinary testing for hormones, and much more.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Welcome back, Ben.
Feels good to be back, dude. We've almost had a complete withdrawal of any of our formal Q&A episodes whatsoever for like a month.
I know. I started to get emails. Are you okay? Is everything all right? What happened? Yeah. Did you guys break up?
We did. And I got some withdrawal headaches, but it's all good now.
I got indigestion and diarrhea. Is that from that same thing?
Mm. No, that's probably the fact that since we're not talking, your diet has likely slipped.
That's true.
You don't have me there to hold you accountable on podcasts.
I went straight to McDonald's.
Mm, yeah, McDonald's sprinkled with gluten powder.
And yes, extra gluten.
Extra. So can you do that at McDonald's, by the way? Can you tell them to
order extra gluten? Oh, yeah.
Gluten size you?
Super gluten.
Mm. Hey, so one thing I've been doing, Brock, that I haven't had a chance to tell you much about is I got a brand new toy in my garage.
Mm. Mm. A motorbike.
I actually got two new toys. One, not going to talk about because I'm working on an article about it. But the other is an incline treadmill. Have you ever seen an incline treadmill? Like the one that goes up to like 40%?
Oh, okay. So it's not stuck in incline. It just has a larger range of motion.
Oh, thank God motion. It's not stuck in incline. Because if you've ever been on an incline at 40%, it is nuts. So
I can't even imagine 40%. Like most of them go to like 12.
If I am at 2.0 miles per hour and 40%, it feels close to like an all-out pace on the treadmill.
So you're like pushing on your knees with your hands, like that sort of hiking kind of incline?
Practically. So I've been doing everything from putting on a heavy backpack and doing like uphill walking to doing like yesterday's session was 8 minutes at 20%, 8 minutes at 30%, 8 minutes at 40%, then back down to 30, then back down to 20. And there's two reasons I'm doing this. First, as I mentioned in a few podcast episodes, I have a coach now who's prescribing me training sessions.
Who is sadistic.
And then the other reason is that the cool thing about an incline treadmill is that you get all the benefits of going up without any of the joint and the potential for tissue damage and overtraining that happens when you get the pounding of going down. Hmm. So you pretty much have like this never-ending mountain in your garage. So I got the Nordic Track X11, the Nordic Track X11 incline trainer. So for any of you other sadomasochistic hill climbing Sherpas out there, check it out. It's kind of cool.
I hear the X11A comes with a puke bucket that you can hang from the front of it.
Nice.
In between dry heaving off the edge of his incline treadmill, Ben's been tweeting out all kinds of stuff like normal at twitter.com/BenGreenfield. And now we're going to talk about all those cool things.
All those cool things. So one thing I've been doing quite a bit of when I'm not walking on the treadmill is nature walks. And I have made it a goal to actually learn every plant that's on my property. And you don't have to necessarily
like know them by name.
Well, know that.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Susan.
Yeah, exactly.
Good morning, Ben.
know their
That's
know
right
their,
neighborly of you.
Their usage, their edible characteristics, their medicinal characteristics, what you can do with the root, what you can do with the leaves, what you can do with the stems. And I've been making my kids a part of this where we'll walk out and we'll find plants that we can identify. And one thing that I ran into was that it's a real pain to actually use like a reverse Google image search or even, you know, even any of these apps out there like Plant Snap or Google Goggles. Like none of them seem to work all that well because they're
Google
purely
goggles.
They're automated. Google Goggles That's is ridiculous. Actually an app that you can use. If you Google Goggles, you'll find it. Say that 10 times fast.
No.
So anyways, what I have been using is this app, and I tweeted out about this. It's called the Flower Checker app, and it's a free app that allows you to identify plants, but the unique part about it is there's a live botanist or a team of live botanists. I highly doubt it's just one single live botanist, although it may be just a morbidly obese,
super overworked dude
botanist who sits on the couch and is overworked. But what they do is they review within 24 hours the photos of the leaves, the stem, the plant, etc. You have your location settings turned on when you upload it, so it also identifies where you are. And then they give you the plant, they give you the Wikipedia page for the plant, as well as some other links to find out interesting things about the plants where you're at. So I have identified every single day, I've identified a plant. Some of the cool ones that are around me is one is yarrow, which you can use very similarly to like mint or chamomile. Another one that I have is wormwood or absinthe, which you can use for everything from mind-altering drinks to kind of a mild detox. I've got mullein and Oregon grape and one called ocean spray, which you can actually use. You can use the sticks to make things like arrows because they're extremely, extremely straight and rigid. All sorts of plants, Canadian spear thistle. And I found out that you can kind of like shave the edges off of that and eat it almost like celery as a water source. And you can eat the little purple flowerets. You can cook them up like artichokes. It's very, very cool. It's a great way to get in touch with nature, and it's a good way to do it without wasting all your time, like taking a picture and then holding it up in some like field guide, the way that they would have done it back in the day before the internet. But if the Lewis and Clark expedition had Flower Checker, probably fewer of them would have died, or they would have at least had less of a propensity to eat one another. So there's that, or the Donner Party. So another thing that I tweeted out was a new study about gluten intolerance and the fact that there's an enzyme. It's derived from something called Aspergillus niger. And what it does is it digests gluten in the stomach of what they describe as healthy volunteers. And these healthy volunteers were actually given a meal that contained about 4 grams of gluten, which is a pretty significant portion of gluten. And what they found was that when the gluten was accompanied by this unique new gluten-digesting enzyme, that there were no deleterious GI effects, and these folks were able to completely digest the gluten, you know, this storage protein that's present in things like wheat and barley and rye, and it was able to take what would normally be a gluten peptide that is resistant to digestion and causes all the things like inflammation and bloating and a lot of the things that people who are gluten intolerant associate with gluten consumption. And it was able to allow these folks to actually digest the gluten. So now,
I can finally go back to McDonald's and get my super gluten meal.
That's right. Wonder Bread is back in business.
Hooray!
No reason to avoid gluten because we
just
now
what
have
we always wanted
to biohack gluten. And interestingly, there were no other deleterious GI effects, no explosive diarrhea or anything else that seemed to occur, at least during the length of time of the study. I'm not quite sure of any long-term studies that have been done on the use of this enzyme that efficiently degrades gluten. But the abbreviation for the enzyme, if you want to look this up on Amazon or wherever else you tend to, your local friendly supplement purveyor, it's ANPEP, which stands for Aspergillus niger prolyl endoprotease.
Holy crap.
I will, and I found some capsules, et cetera, of these gluten digesting enzymes on Amazon, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. If you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/319, if you want to experiment with this, maybe have a meal comprised of bread, beer, what else? Maybe
pasta.
Some soy sauce, some pasta, anything else that you've been avoiding because of its gluten content, knock yourself out. Go to town. Have a gluten party. So that was actually an interesting study.
So they didn't mention anything about the cognitive effects of eating gluten. They're just talking sheerly or specifically about gut issues.
Watson, keen observation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Gluten can have neurotoxic effects that are completely separate from any type of gastrointestinal effect. And this is why a lot of times people who use gluten or take in gluten who happen to have an intolerance to it will have problems with everything from brain fog to stuttering to not being able to grab words, you know, the right words that they need when. And this is because of the neurotoxicity. And you are absolutely correct. The enzyme does not – excuse me.
Excuse
does
you.
Does not diminish the neurotoxic effects. So there is that. But, you know, let's say you're whatever. Yeah, you're at a party, you have a couple of beers, and maybe in a little Ziploc bag in your pocket, you have a couple of gluten digesting enzymes to help you out a little bit. So yeah. There's that.
Nice.
So another thing that I tweeted out, the last study that I wanted to mention was one that appeared in Clinical Physiology and Functional Imaging. Odd journal for this one to appear in, but it looked into the effects of exercise training under hypoxia. And what they actually found was that when you exercise in a state of hypoxia, meaning low oxygen availability, which would be everything from the use of an altitude chamber to one of these like resistance training masks to like hypoxic underwater training sessions, it actually triggers a release of adiponectin. Adiponectin is a hormone that mobilizes fats specifically from adipose tissue and allows you to burn those fatty acids for energy. And what they found was that circulating adiponectin levels significantly increased when exercise was performed under hypoxic conditions. And in this case, it was aquatic exercise, so pool-based exercise like swimming and aqua aerobics with the little dorky foam dumbbells, that type of thing. Ultimately, though, you know, hypoxia and hypoxic training sessions is something that I do quite a bit of. You know, at least a couple of times a week, I'm in the pool going back and forth underwater while holding my breath. And actually, on a recent trip to Arizona, I, with a group of three other guys, wound up doing a couple sessions like this where we would do things like drag dumbbells underneath the water back and forth through the pool while holding our breath. And not only is it a fantastic workout for your lungs, it's great for stress resilience and focus, but it turns out it also burns more fat too. So I'll link to that in these other studies if you want to peruse them over in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/319. And there was one last thing I wanted to mention since it's been a little while since we've had a podcast. I had two posts that kind of went viral that if you're listening to this episode and you haven't had a chance to check out yet, you may want to check out. And they both involve what would be considered sin substances. So one post was on how to get all of the effects of weed from a 100% healthy and non-addictive alternative to weed called cannabidiol. And quite a monster of a post going into.
Oh, man. That took me days to get through that thing.
All the effects of CBD, but one to send to your Kindle or to check out because it's certainly something that I'm using quite a bit of these days. You know, you don't get some of the potential for some of the gray matter damage and the things like that can occur with weed, with edibles, with things that contain THC, and you get all the anti-anxiety and anti-inflammatory effects when you use this CBD component. So
also the anti going to jail.
And the anti going to jail, depending on where you're at. Plus, kids can use it completely safely as well, which is nice. And then the other one was on booze. And I'm now drinking a wine that is lower in sugar and the same in alcohol, that's a must for me. I refuse to drink any wine that has a lower than normal amount of alcohol in it. But this wine also has enhanced amounts of flavanols and polyphenols and resveratrol, some of the active antioxidant components in wine. It's called a Fitvine wine. But I wrote the article not just on this Fitvine wine, but on wine in general and what kind of things to look for in wine, how to control like the sulfite and the amine-based headaches, some little biohacks, how to biohack your wine and all sorts of interesting things like that when it comes to booze and specifically wine. So I'll link to both of those articles as well in the show notes over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/319. So now you can go enjoy your weed and your booze.
Party!
All right, folks, you may have heard the recent podcast episode I recorded with this cat who designed a drink. His name is Zach Abbott. He designed a drink that you throw back. It's a little shot, and it digests the toxic byproducts of alcohol for you, meaning that you feel great the next day after you've been drinking. And while I only endorse holiday responsible drinking and responsible drinking in general, it is nice to know you can maybe sneak in an extra cocktail or a glass of wine just because that holiday party is so freaking long. And there's nothing to do but drink. So you throw back a shot of this stuff and it basically digests acetaldehyde for you, which is the chemical unwanted byproduct of alcohol. And so what they've done is they've bioengineered this probiotic to do that for you. And it works amazingly. You feel great the next day. It's very, very simple. You get a box of this stuff. You throw back a shot of it before you drink. Or if you forget, sometimes people are forgetful and you remember halfway through the party, you just throw it back then. And here's the deal. They've got steep discounts going on. You go to ZBiotics, called ZBiotics, if you're in Europe, ZBiotics.com/Ben, ZBiotics.com/Ben. You get 15% off your first order when you use code Ben at checkout, 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, because you had 8 glasses of wine, you woke up the next morning and you weren't feeling that great, they'll refund your money. No questions asked, but please don't have 8 glasses of wine. So you go to zbiotics.com/Ben, use code Ben at checkout for 15% off. You got to try this stuff. Everybody I've told about ZBiotics, they have literally come back and said, dude, I had no clue. I was skeptical at first. I was skeptical myself, but it actually works. Very interesting. So zbiotics.com/Ben. All right, folks. Well, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break a bad habit than quitting that bad habit, cold turkey. I'm not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor standing on a nail bed or something like that. I'm talking about this thing called Fume. This little thing called Fume holds a hallowed place in my fanny pack, actually. I've been hitting up the maple pepper core in that thing quite a bit. So anyways, the Fume is not a vape. It's a flavored air device. You breathe natural flavors through it. Like I said, I got the maple pepper core loaded up in mine right now. Turns out black pepper really hits the spot, so I can feel satisfied without breathing in or chewing on anything bad. It's amazing. I've got another one called the crisp mint core, so I can breathe in mint flavored air rather than a pen infused with something else. You know what I mean? That kind of bad habit that isn't good for you. Instead, you just basically use this pen, and it is an essential oil pen. It's amazing. A flavored air device. You get the taste sensation and the fidget and that hand-to-mouth action, but you don't have to feel guilty about the habit. It's a good habit to have. They have a whole bunch of natural, delicious flavors. It's not a vape. Don't get me wrong. It's a natural air device. It's fully legal. It doesn't have anything bad in it. I even use it on an airplane. I get a few funny looks with people who think I'm vaping on an airplane, even though I'm not. It's just basically flavored air, and it tastes great. I found it made my cravings go out the window. It's weird. It's a crazy life hack, but it works, and it's super sexy and cool looking too. So it's called Fume, F-U-M. You can get 10% off this thing if you go to tryfume.com, tryfume.com, use code Ben to save 10%. So you can accelerate humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up what's called their Journey Pack today. It has a whole bunch of cool flavors, including that crisp mint core and the maple pepper core, two of my favorites. So again, tryfume.com/Ben and use code Ben to save 10% off your order from Fume, F-U-M. Well, folks, you and I, or the average American at least, spend an average of 90% of time indoors, breathing around 30,000 gallons of air daily. According to the EPA, indoor air can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, 100 times more polluted, especially like your home gym where you're breathing in even more air. This can be a serious issue. Data shows that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths around the world. So you need air purifying technology. And the one that I like as a standalone system that doesn't require you to go re-outfit your entire home's AC system or ducts is called the Air Doctor. The Air Doctor filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens like pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold, so your lungs don't need to. Their Ultra HEPA filter has been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested bacteria and viruses and virtually 100% of particles as small as 0.003 microns. They also feature whisper jet fans, 30% quieter than normal ordinary air purifiers, and they are extremely affordable and accessible. Furthermore, they're going to give you up to 39% off of one of their extremely impressive and efficacious air filters, or up to $300 off today. Here's how you lock this in. You go to airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You can get one with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund, minus shipping, but you're going to love it. airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You'll get up to 39% off or up to $300 off. So lock it in today, folks. You'll enjoy it. Clean air is something everybody deserves. You can get it with the Air Doctor.
Listener Q&A.
Hey, Ben. Derek here. I developed a soreness on my inside my elbow. Not tennis elbow, but I guess they call it golfer's elbow. And I believe it is from kettlebell cleaning. I was wondering what you recommend to help heal this off. It's only my right arm, but I believe it's from the kettlebell clean. As you're coming up, it feels like that muscle, and it's not going away. It's a slight pain, but I never had tennis elbow, but now I have golfer's elbow. So any tips on how to get better? Thanks.
Well, you may hear a dog barking in the background there, Brock. That's my sister-in-law's dog that we're watching.
If my ears don't mistake me, it sounds like a fat dachshund.
Yes, it's a fat little wiener dog that, frankly, I'm not a huge fan of, and I would love to just like eat it for dinner. And I hope she doesn't listen into this podcast, but the dog is not among my favorites. I like big, majestic, wolf-like dogs, not little dogs that have been bred to fit into purses. So, but that's just me. Anyways, though, to turn to Eric's question about the elbow, you know, this is actually a problem that I've been running into quite a bit with folks who are doing like obstacle racing, Spartan racing, American Ninja Warrior style stuff, CrossFit with all the pull-ups. You get pain, and you get pain not in the outside of your elbow, where folks would traditionally get pain associated with like tennis elbow, what's also called lateral epicondylitis, but you instead get it on the medial, on the inside of the elbow, and it's basically a tendinosis of the medial epicondyle of the elbow.
And right, so let's get the placement. So if I'm standing there with my hands turned so my palms are facing forward.
Yeah, it's on the inside.
The part closest to my ribs is where the pain is.
Exactly. On the inside, not the outside of the elbow. So it's also referred to as climber's elbow. Sometimes it's called pitcher's elbow. In this case, in Eric's
kettlebell
case,
elbow.
Kettlebell elbow. Golfer's elbow, of course, like I mentioned. And it's actually it's associated with anything where you are gripping and pulling simultaneously. And so you see it a lot in grip-intensive sports. And it's actually something that's very difficult to manage and to get rid of. And the reason that it's so much more difficult than even like a lateral epicondylitis or like a tennis elbow to get rid of is because it's an area where there's a little less blood flow. And it's also an area that tends to be aggravated quite a bit by activities that we commonly do in our day-to-day lives these days. Specifically, texting and typing causes these little tendons that run over that medial epicondyle to stay inflamed. And it can be really, really tough. You know, normally you'll see all of the recommendations that you tend to see for injuries out there recommended to manage this, like, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or even natural anti-inflammatories like, you know, curcumin or fish oil. You'll see heat recommended. You'll see ice recommended. You'll see like these elbow straps or counterforce braces that actually work really, really well for tennis elbow. These little braces that you wear above the elbow, they don't work that well for like a golfer's elbow, even like a full on sleeve over the elbow or like this, you know, like the kinesio tape that folks will tape themselves up with. Huh. A lot of times, none of this stuff works for like a golfer's elbow or a climber's elbow. And it can be very, very frustrating and painful because every time you pull or you grip, it just hurts. So I've had this injury before. I've gotten rid of it, and I've walked a few people through it. And what I recommend is the following. First of all, you got to do some really intensive like forearm and deep tissue work. And it can be hard if you've ever tried to like foam roll your arm. It's pretty hard to do. It's also pretty hard to use like a lacrosse ball on your arm, you know, like the Becoming a Supple Leopard book would go into. Like there's not a lot for like the elbow and the forearm there. But what you can do is you can pin your arm between two surfaces that allow you to almost like roll it as it's pinned. And there's a device out there that is specifically designed for climbers, for golfers, for grippers, for typists, for people who do things that aggravate that medial epicondyle. It's called the Arm Aid. The Arm Aid, and it's like
you've got
it looks
a video
like this,
about that, don't you?
This giant claw, because I own one and I've used it just because I've been doing so much more climbing for like Spartan racing and stuff like that. And also I do a lot of gripping now with the bow, shooting the bow.
Oh so, yeah, I bet.
Yeah, and then of course I'm also typing a lot, and so it's reared its ugly head on me a few times, and I use this Arm Aid and just use it the same way as I would a foam roller. So just deep tissue work, and if you have this as a chronic condition, this medial epicondylitis or this inflammation in your elbow, you would want to do this every day the same way as you'd foam roll, say, like your IT band. If you had IT band friction syndrome, you'd want to work that deep tissue every single day. So it's called the Arm Aid. So that's number one. Number two is I went through a bunch of the different books and ebooks and online manuals and YouTube videos that are out there for golfer's elbow and for climber's elbow. And there was one that I found that's like this systematic thing that you do every day. It involves like holding on to a wooden dowel, or you can even use like a hammer just because it has a little weight on the end of it and a handle that you hold on to. You can use nothing and just go through the rotation, but it involves a series of rotations that you do with both your elbow bent and your elbow straight, along with a series of resisted hand opening exercises where you'll like use a rubber band that's wrapped around your hand and you'll open your hand and extend and then close it and open it and close it, almost like grip training. Mm. And this thing, when I went through that program combined with daily deep tissue work using the Arm Aid, I got rid of this elbow pain almost right away. After doing everything from like prolotherapy and platelet rich plasma injections and, you know, the anti-inflammatories and the topical anti-inflammatories and the ice and the heat and the electrostim and the vibration and the cold laser, and nothing held a candle to just using the Arm Aid and then going through this program. It's called Golfer's Elbow Cure. Super cheesy program. It's like this little ebook with crappy grainy photos, and like it's, you know, it's one of those like online books that's all like hyped up with a sales page and everything, but it actually works. So that is the next thing that I'd recommend. That's number two. All right. And then number three, if you don't want this problem to come back and you like climb a lot or you golf a lot and you get pain on the inside of your elbow, you have to make sure that you're typing, if you use a computer, that most of your typing is done not with the elbows bent, but with the elbows more extended than bent, which means if your desk or your workstation sets you up in a position where your elbows are bent as you're typing, every time your little fingers move, what happens is all the tendons rub over that inner and outer elbow. Whereas if your arm is extended, you get a lot less of that type of movement, that type of rubbing over the bony condyles in the elbow. So essentially what you want to do is get yourself in a position where your arms are kind of extended as you're typing. Now, the catch 22 is that sometimes there can be like a vision or an eyesight issue. Like if you have poor vision or poor eyesight, by typing with your arms more extended, that by definition means your screen is going to be farther away from you. So that can throw some people for a loop and, I don't know, get bifocals or something like that. Or a bigger
telescope
or a bigger monitor. Yeah. But basically you want to avoid typing with the elbows really bent or hunched over. So you would want to, like, have you ever typed like on an airplane with your computer on the tray in front of
you? It's basically like at your belly button.
That is the exact opposite of the position you'd want to be in when typing. So you want to tweak your workstation or tweak your typing setup so your arms are extended as you type. So those are the three things I would do. The Arm Aid, I would use this little ebook, and I'll link to it in the show notes, called The Golfer's Elbow Cure. And then I would make sure that I adjust any type of typing biomechanics. And you can definitely get rid of this soreness, but it's a tough one. It's one of the tougher injuries, kind of like IT band syndrome. It's one of the tougher injuries to get rid of.
Do you think Eric might be doing something wrong or some weird technique with this kettlebell cleans that might be causing the problem?
It's possible, but honestly, a lot of times what happens is you get this inflammation, right? And the inflammation could be from typing, it could be from gripping, it could be from overtraining, it could be from lack of deep tissue work or fascial adhesions, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit later in the podcast, this whole concept of fascia. And then what happens is, no matter how good your form is, it just continues to aggravate the area. It's just working out with an injury. And of course, you definitely do want to make sure that you're using good form on the cleans. But assuming that the clean form is proper, it's one of those deals where you have to do some of these other things that I mentioned to actually heal it up before returning back to the cleans.
Hey guys, I've been using creatine monohydrate for mental performance since you guys have been talking about that. And over the past couple of weeks, I seem to have gained some water weight. So I was wondering if you have any thoughts on how to prevent that or minimize that when supplementing with creatine. Love to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Sounds like Brandon's getting fat.
Getting fat from creatine. So, the water retention can be an issue with creatine. I actually did a podcast with Onnit about this. We had like a brief little 15-minute podcast on creatine, and the fact that most of the water retention issues with creatine arise from following the old school recommendations of loading with creatine. Mm. And by loading with creatine, you're typically taking anywhere from 15 to 20 grams of creatine. And you're using that amount daily during a loading protocol that lasts anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks. It's pretty rare that I've seen anybody be able to handle that amount of creatine without getting water retention and some of the cramping that's associated with creatine. And what you can do, and what I do with creatine when I start using it, or when I stop using it and then I start back into it, is I just take 5 grams daily. So 5 grams of creatine is the amount of creatine you'd want to use to actually get all of the strength and the power. And I'll talk about some of the cognitive benefits of creatine here in a second. But that's the amount that you'd use. And by skipping the loading period, it does take a little bit longer for the benefits of creatine to set in. It takes about 2 to 3 weeks to really start to feel the effects of creatine if you start into 5 grams of creatine versus doing a loading protocol of like 20 grams. But you avoid the water retention issue with creatine when you do that. And I used to do a lot of this like creatine loading and deloading, and I'd get those cramping issues all the time. And now that I just take a small amount each day, it's not an issue. So in terms of the cognitive effect, it actually really is very interesting. So first of all, they've found that in vegans and vegetarians who are typically in a state of chronic creatine deficiency, that creatine, specifically using this 5 grams per day dose, has been shown to increase memory, increase learning, and increase cognitive performance. And that's specifically in vegetarians and vegans. And this has also been shown to work in other populations who tend to have low creatine levels, and that's specifically people who are sleep deprived and elderly people. So the cognitive benefits seem to set in most in people who are prone to creatine deficiency. they've found that in omnivores or in people who tend to eat meat on a regular basis, that the cognitive benefits of creatine are not as pronounced, and that you don't notice quite as much in terms of creatine if you are getting enough meat in your diet, if you're not sleep deprived, if you're not elderly. So ultimately, you know, I know that I've talked about creatine and cognitive performance before, but it appears to have most of its cognitive benefit if you are someone who is creatine deficient, not eating much meat, sleep deprived, or elderly. In other cases, you're probably getting enough creatine just from meat intake to be able to avoid any of the type of cognitive deficits that arise from creatine deficiencies. However, if you're listening in and you're like vegan or vegetarian, I definitely recommend creatine supplementation. And also, this was a very recent study in terms of elderly people and spatial recall and long-term memory, it appears to significantly enhance what's called executive working memory in the elderly. And so, you know, as I age and I look at the things that I might use as like an anti-aging or a longevity supplement, creatine would definitely be something that I'd use. Creatine is also something to stack with, say, like a smart drug or a neurotropic if you're ever operating on a day in which you're sleep deprived.
So I was going to say, is creatine sort of along the lines of like B vitamins then, where it's not necessarily giving you like an advantage or like a superhuman boost, it's just bringing you back up to baseline?
Exactly. Now, the only caveat there, the only exception to that is there was one study that they did on people who were eating an omnivorous diet, and in this case, it was adolescents, and they did find a slight increase in reaction speed when supplementing with creatine. And you could certainly argue that reaction speed is a cognitive performance gain. And the other thing that I should mention is that regardless of the cognitive benefits, creatine has been demonstrably proven, whether or not you're creatine deficient, to improve strength, power, speed, explosiveness, etc. So, you know, in that case, you know, you don't have to be vegan or vegetarian or elderly or sleep deprived to benefit from creatine. You know, if you're a strength athlete or a power athlete or someone who wants to crank out a few more reps in the weight room, creatine is one of the most researched and the safest supplements to use. In most cases, just a basic creatine monohydrate works just fine. Now, I do use something that's slightly fancier than that. I use something called Cre-O2. It's made by this company called Millennium Sports. And one of the main reasons that I use that is because it's what's called enteric coated, which means that it's stomach stable. It bypasses any type of destruction in the acidic environment of the stomach. And because I take so little creatine, I want to make sure that I absorb as much of it as possible, and I've found zero cramping or water retention effects with that. I like it. It's convenient for me. It's more convenient than like a creatine monohydrate powder. It is more expensive, right? So I take 3 to 4 tablets of that in the morning, and I take that almost year-round now. So it's a little bit more expensive, but at the same time, you can take less of it because there's no destruction during the digestion and the assimilation process because it's very, very stomach stable. It's just basically like a time-release tablet, but you are going to pay more than you'd pay for just like a basic creatine monohydrate powder. And that stuff has some other things. It's got like rhodiola and cordyceps and some of these other things in it. And, you know, frankly, I don't take it for those reasons. I just take it for the creatine and the stomach stable creatine. But that one's called Cre-O2. And I have a 50% discount on that stuff. I'll throw in the show notes over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/319 if you want to use that stuff.
Hey, a couple of times you mentioned cramping. What do you mean by cramping? Like stomach cramps or muscle cramps?
With creatine, yeah. Muscle cramps. Although if you take a lot, if you take 20 plus grams, it can result in a little bit of a dumb and dumber toilet moment type of effect that some people actually do have issues with. But that's typically either A, because you just started taking creatine and you took way too much and you used like this 20 plus gram loading protocol, or B, because you didn't take it with sufficient water. You typically have to take creatine with 12 plus ounces of water if you're using like that higher dosage. So yeah, usually it's muscle cramping, but if you take a really, really high dose, it can also be go way beyond muscle.
That's interesting. I have been experiencing some weird muscle cramps over the last few weeks, like just while I'm doing yoga, or like I was taking my wetsuit off the other day and I got wicked cramps in my abs. And I'm now thinking maybe it's because I've been taking creatine really consistently for about 2 months now.
How much have you been using?
Just 5 grams.
Interesting. Well, you want to make sure that you're taking it with enough water. And that would be the biggie, because what's going to happen is, because creatine is going to enhance both your glycogen storage as well as your creatine storage on the muscular level, you simply need more water, period, because you've got more stuff in your muscle that needs to be saturated with water. So if you're not stepping up your water intake at the same time that you start into a creatine protocol, you need to be, or else you are going to have those little twitches and cramps when you're taking off your wetsuit, as we all hate to experience when we're taking off our wetsuits.
Awesome. Well, Brandon and I both learned something today.
Most therapists I talk to believe that toxins are often trapped in myofascial adhesions. This comes up in post-treatment discussions. For example, they say, drink a lot of water today after they give you some kind of myofascial treatment. But I never hear it discussed as a preventive measure. So does detoxification and avoidance of toxic substances help prevent the buildup of adhesions? Is it an effective adjunct to the various myofascial release therapies? I would love to hear Ben's opinion on this. Thanks.
I've had this too. You know, when you leave the yoga studio, or you're leaving the massage, and they're like, oh, make sure you drink a lot of water. Make sure you stay hydrated.
Yep, exactly. And I actually used to do hip and knee surgical sales back in the day when I was first out of college. And a lot of times when...
You were selling body parts?
I was selling body parts, specifically implants. But when an orthopedic surgeon during surgery cuts through some of the areas of thickened fascia, like especially like around the hips, or really, really thick fascia in the knees, it actually spurts like nasty stuff, literally like pus-like deposits of white blood cells. And a lot of times you'll see like thickened, hardened, like calcification like deposits within this fascia. And a lot of people who, I mean, just imagine if someone lifts weights a lot or runs a lot and, you know, beats up their fascia, you know, this sheath that surrounds your connective tissue and your muscles, and they never massage that. They never focus on releasing some of the tension or working out some of the cross fibers in that tissue. Just imagine the areas of like calcification and pus and white blood cell accumulation.
It's awful.
It's pretty crazy. And you know, I mean, you talk to a lot of people who are like constantly tight or constantly get injured, and a big part of that could just be due to like the stickiness in these adhesions. So what an adhesion is it's just a type of scarring or scar tissue that can accumulate specifically in the fascia that surrounds your muscles. And you know, what's happening there is you get like this stickiness or this glue-like consistency in a sheath that's supposed to slide a little bit over the muscles as it moves. And once that sliding doesn't occur, you get tissues and even organs that can become a little bit glued together because they're not moving freely. Now, it doesn't just have to be exercise-based trauma that can cause these type of adhesions. So, for example, mineral imbalances can predispose you to soft tissue adhesions. One of those would be something that we talked about on the podcast with Dr. Wendy Myers, and that is specifically copper toxicity, which is a pretty serious issue these days. It's one of the heavy metals that tends to be one of the more notorious ones in our industrial era for accumulating in the body. Imbalances in other heavy metals, or presence of other heavy metals, and specifically things like iron, manganese, aluminum, nickel, boron, things like that can also cause soft tissue adhesion. So basically, if you play with a lot of Chinese toys, you might be in trouble when it comes to adhesions.
Or if you have a lot of tattoos.
Exactly, or if you're like a car mechanic. So inflammation is, of course, something that can cause these adhesions, and it's one of the things that we're more aware of. And typically, it's inflammation from exercise, from overtraining, or from overusing specific muscle groups, especially allowing metabolic waste to accumulate that you don't work out with, like a foam roller, with cold, with heat, with inversion, with a lot of the recovery modalities that are smart to include in your training. Now, infections from bacteria, viruses, parasites, even fungi and mold, that can actually affect the tissues as well. And there is such a thing as infection-caused adhesions, which is likely what you see when you see like pus and tissue drainage occur when someone cuts into an area of fascia. So what happens, though, once you get these fascia is A, like I mentioned, you get a restriction of physical movement. So that can be everything from like structural imbalances in the spine, like scoliosis or kyphosis. It can lead to like bone deformities. It can lead to, you know, sacroiliac joint syndrome, where a lot of the fascia around the hips, you know, it causes like stickiness and glue-like adhesions in there. So, you know, when people say they have a bad back or bad knees, a lot of times it's not joint. It's not collagen. It's not the tissue within the joint. It's more the fascia that surrounds the joint and the muscles that are around that joint. When you look at like Chinese medicine and the flow of meridian energy and like these acupuncture meridians that you put needles into, a lot of times what you look at when you have areas of fascial adhesions is a restriction of actual energy flow, which I know, and for many people that's more of a woo-woo concept, but it is true that we actually have a flow of qi, a flow of energy throughout the meridians in our body, and soft tissue adhesions can interfere with that as well. It can keep tissues from draining properly, because when you look at adhesions, you're causing tissues to become more squeezed and more restricted, and that can cause metabolic byproducts to accumulate in the tissue. It can cause toxins to build up. You might have things like urine not flowing out of your kidneys adequately, or your bladder not emptying properly, or even your liver cells less able to eliminate a lot of the toxins that can accumulate in the liver. So, you know, a lot of your normal detoxification is kind of impaired. And then you also get a restriction of circulation of your blood vessels and your lymph vessels, because it's harder for those vessels to feed into areas where there's cross-linking and adhesions. And that, of course, can restrict hormones from reaching cells. It can interfere with everything from like insulin to glucose to fatty acid delivery to just the basic movement of chemicals around your body. So yeah, it certainly can be an issue. And of course, me describing it pretty much tells you what to do about it. One would be to, you know, like I mentioned, look into the metal issue. You know, every year I do a 30-day metal detox where I just get rid of heavy metals in my body. I use this spray called Metal Free. It's like an amino acid based spray that chelates metals and helps the body to remove them. You can look, of course, into deep tissue work for the more structural component. And like this morning, I foam rolled for a half hour. Okay. Nice. And I do that 1 to 2 times a week. I feel like $1 million afterwards. And I look at that as an anti-aging protocol. There's this book called Why Does Olga Run? It's about this like 90-some-year-old track and field star. And one of her protocols is she, and she does this actually when she wakes up at night. There's this myth around that's this idea that you're supposed to sleep through the entire night and have an uninterrupted 8 hours of sleep, when in fact it's completely normal, and our ancestors probably would have woken up for things like, you know, sex and movement and dancing and, you know, chatting around the fire and that type of thing. And she would wake up every night like clockwork, and she actually used a wine bottle, and she would just knead her tissue and work out all these fascial adhesions with a wine bottle as she lay in bed. And I look on this, you know, like my 1 to 2 times per week foam roller sessions, I look on it as not just a structural movement protocol to assist me with exercise and sports performance, but also as like an anti-aging protocol to keep myself from building up a lot of these toxins and the buildup of metabolic waste that can occur when you've got fascia that's just never getting worked, that's never getting moved around, or these adhesions, these cross-linkings that are never getting removed. So that's another thing to do, is just the structural work. And the book, Becoming a Supple Leopard, and I'll link to that in the show notes, is fantastic when it comes to that. You can also make sure that you're getting adequate substances necessary for assisting with the integrity of fascia into your diet. Omega-3 fatty acids and fish oils are one. A lot of these things that you tend to see as natural anti-inflammatories, tart cherry juice, glucosamine, chondroitin, turmeric, minerals that come from things like chicken cartilage or like the ground up bones and cartilage of animals, these can actually help out quite a bit. You know, for example, one of the things that's in my fridge is Nature Flex, and that is it's a joint and cartilage support compound. And, you know, that's, you know, one of total, what do you call it? Total, transparency, full disclosure. Like that is a green filled supplement, right? That's like a green filled fitness system supplement, but it's one of like my flagship supplements because I put everything in there that a joint would ever need for repair and recovery, whether it's from an injury or whether it's due to fascial adhesion. So that's something else that I use quite a bit of is this Nature Flex stuff. And then of course, like just structural work. If you're really, really messed up, you may actually need to work with an osteopath or a chiropractic doc or a Rolfer or a massage therapist to kind of like jumpstart you into maintaining what they've done by doing foam roller. And so for a very long time, I used to get massages a couple of times a week. And that was just, you know, for me, I had the convenience that my personal training office, I shared with a massage office. And so I would just do like trades with the massage therapist. And now I'm just kind of on cruise control with the foam roller. But every once in a while, you know, like when I visit Thailand, right, like I'll get a massage every day, twice a day for 2 weeks and kind of like reinitiate that intense soft tissue work where I'm getting extremely pliable. And then the last thing, as far as like detoxification and avoiding the buildup of minerals and a lot of these other things that can cause adhesions, infrared sauna therapy, especially doing like infrared sauna prior to a massage session. And I know I said I was going to talk about this perhaps in the future, but I'll talk about it now. Toys, you know, I mentioned that I just got a new toy at being that incline treadmill. But the other toy is something I'm building right now in my gym and writing an article on kind of like how to biohack and make hotter and reduce the electromagnetic radiation. And it's an infrared sauna that I'm building. And once that's done, I'll get in that infrared sauna, and I got a specific type that's big enough for me to do foam rolling in, and I'll do my foam rolling while I'm getting exposed to this infrared, so I get both the detoxification as well as the structural work all at the same time.
Cool.
And so for me, it's not about, you know, like being a funny biohacker, right? It's about anti-aging and longevity and feeling really good from doing this stuff. So ultimately, that's the deal with fascia. So, you know, yes, it can cause toxin buildup, and yes, you know, drinking a lot of water and moving around a lot is good, but a lot of times you got to do a lot more than that when it comes to adhesions. So I'll put a link to some of this stuff that I've recommended, everything from like the Becoming a Supple Leopard book to I'll link to the metal spray that I use and the Nature Flex and the fish oils and all that jazz over in the show notes if you want to check them out.
So actually, just so happens that I posted the chapter 18 of Beyond Training audiobook on the app today. So that's chapter that actually covers all the detoxification and avoiding toxic substances and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we're releasing my book, Beyond Training, chapter by chapter right now inside of our premium podcast. We have another podcast we don't talk about a lot, but we release extra audios and stuff in there. It's over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/premium. And yeah, each chapter takes me like an hour and a half to record. But this one was all about toxins, detoxing your home, detoxing your bathroom cabinet, detoxing your household cleaning chemicals. And yeah, that'd be certainly a good one to listen into if you really want to geek out on this stuff.
Hi, Ben and Brock. I absolutely love your podcast. First is about a test called DUTCH, dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. It's, from what I understand, the new sort of gold standard for cortisol testing. And I was just wondering if you've heard of it. It's by Precision Analytical. I have done salivary and blood hormone testing before, but I came across this test and I was wondering if you know anything about it and if you feel that it is indeed worth getting. Thanks so much.
to me, the word dry urine is just,
I know, I can't help but imagine just weird. Somebody peeing on something and leaving it in the sun.
Right, so right. Or what just you do? Urine is wet. It's not dry. So just the vernacular dry urine seems a little bit strange. So there are a few different ways that you can test your hormones. And of course, probably the most standard way and the way that most people get it tested, just because it typically comes along with other tests that you do, is a blood test or a serum test. And the problem with that as a hormonal panel is that it's a snapshot, right? So when I go in and I get a performance panel and a full test from a company like Wellness FX, it certainly includes hormones, but the hormonal part of that is a snapshot of, say, like my morning cortisol. And it doesn't tell me, let's say my morning cortisol is low, right? Which is technically not bad for it to be a little bit low, even though you want morning cortisol to be a little bit higher than cortisol at some other points during the day. Because when sunlight hits your body and you wake up in the morning, you want a little bit of a surge of cortisol to wake you up. But let's say that I were to repeat that blood test multiple times during the day, I would want to see a fluctuation, right? Like I'd want to see a drop between morning and noon, and then a slight rise from noon to the afternoon, and then another drop from the afternoon to the time that I go to bed. And by using a blood corollary for hormones, that's pretty difficult to do, unless you want to be bleeding out a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of getting stabbed in one day.
And that's where saliva comes in. Saliva being probably the more popular way to test hormones for people who want a running value, who want to get like a twice a day, a three times a day, or even a four time a day cortisol or DHEA or testosterone measurement. And probably the most popular measurement for this is the adrenal stress index, or the ASI. And it really is a very simple salivary hormone panel that you can order to your house that gives you a very, very good image of your running values of hormone. And it's something that, you know, I've talked about before in previous podcasts, is a great way to check in and see if you're overtrained or overreached. If you're in, you know, like, you know, stage 2 or stage 3 or stage 4 adrenal fatigue, each of those different stages of adrenal fatigue has a different adrenal stress index pattern associated with it, specifically in terms of cortisol DHEA ratios. Mm-hmm. So hormones via saliva are probably, you know, at this point, the most popular / best way to test for hormones in terms of what most people are talking about and what most physicians are using. Now, hair is a third way, and hair is an interesting choice because it's very stable. And a lot of times it is used in studies
maybe
on
your
stress
hair is stable.
And overtraining. And there's some pretty good peer-reviewed scientific literature on the use of hair as a measurement of hormones. But the problem with hair is it takes a really long time, and you gotta, of course, you know, cut your hair to get it measured, and it's just it's the probably the least researched of the different hormonal measuring tools. But it certainly is something that you can get hormonal data from. And then finally, there is this dry urine test or a urine test, and I've recommended many times, especially to women, this concept of a 24-hour urine sex steroid test. And I've done my own 24-hour urine sex steroid test when I did the FASTER study, which was the high-fat, low-carb performance study over at University of Connecticut for Jeff Volek's lab. And you literally do collect all of your urine into this orange jug as you walk around during the day, and it's done for a full 24 hours. So it's definitely probably even less convenient than getting four different, you know, blood panels, really, when it comes to just like walking around with a giant orange canister full of your piss all day long. But it's how this 24-hour urine test is done. And this Dutch test, which stands for the Dried Urine Test for Comprehensive Hormones, is something that assesses everything from your first morning void of urine and then gives you over a 24-hour collection period your entire cycle of hormones for every time that you basically take a piss during the day. And so it's very, very good. You know, you can measure estradiol and all your estrogens, your progesterone, your testosterone, your cortisol. You can measure DHEA, all your anabolic, all of your catabolic hormones. And you can get a ton of data from a urinary panel. And I know that you're familiar with Chris Kresser, right? brought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I hung out with him at PaleoFX this year.
Yeah, he's a pretty well-known, he's not a physician. He's like a licensed acupuncturist, but he's well-known in like kind of the alternative medical or the functional medical community. And the 24-hour urine test is actually his test of choice because what he says is that it combines the advantages of saliva testing with the ability to measure what are called androgen and glucocorticoid metabolites in addition to just the hormones. And all that means is you're not just testing hormones, but you're also testing a lot of the precursors used to make those hormones. So it's a very, very thorough test, albeit inconvenient, but it does show you not just the hormones, but a lot of what are called the sex hormone metabolites. Now, I know that on other podcasts and in some of my writings, I have recommended the online lab testing service Direct Labs as like a wholesale way to order tests. And I looked into it, and they actually do not carry this Dutch test. It's made by a company called Precision Analytical. However, what I found out was that a company called Genova, which you actually can order from Direct Labs, Genova has something called a complete hormone kit. And this complete hormone kit is, it's a urinary panel, very, very similar to this dry urine test for comprehensive hormones. And I'll link to that in the show notes, but basically it's the same as this Precision Analytical test for all intents and purposes. So that one's called the complete hormone kit by Genova.
Just because I know we're going to get a bunch of emails about that, do you know if that's available outside of the USA?
Probably not. Although what I typically do with my Canadian clients who I recommend lab tests to, and you know this, Brock, is I'll send you the test that I recommend and then have you go to a local functional medical doc or your local medical facility, show them the test and see what similar tests that they have as a corollary. Because it is, frankly, in the U.S. that, you know, we live in one of the few spots where it's very, very simple to order home tests for this stuff. And I know that in other countries, that's not the case. So in this case, you'd go to the Direct Labs website. If you don't live in the U.S., you'd print off that test, you'd bring it into your doc or your medical facility, and you'd tell them you'd like to get something as close as possible to that test. And frankly, I don't have every country, you know, memorized in terms of which countries offer which tests and the names of the different tests in different countries, because I am not a rocket scientist. I am actually, I am based on the review that we're about to read in Idiot Savant. So, yes.
Really?
Yes. And so that's probably a great segue.
All right.
To this week's review. So that does about wrap up the Q&A. And of course, we'll link to everything that we talked about over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/319. But we always like to end the show by being our own little Santa Claus and sending little gifts to the boys and girls across the world. And in this case, if you've left a review and a nice star rating on iTunes and you hear us read your review on the show, all you got to do is email gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. And when you email gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com, that's not gear like Richard Gear, but gear like G-E-A-R, gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. We'll include your t-shirt size, and we'll send you a t-shirt, a BPA-free water bottle that's not going to disrupt your hormones or cause fascial adhesions or explosive diarrhea, and we'll send you a cool tech t-shirt that makes you look fantastic, whether you're a guy or a girl. If you're a guy, it'll give you a six-pack and wide shoulders. If you're a girl, it'll give you
a six-pack and wide shoulders.
That's right. Give you a boob job. So anyways, we have a review, a five-star review from Tabiki Man, and the title is Ben is an
Do you
idiot.
Think it's Tabiki Man or Thai Bike Man?
Oh, yeah. It's probably Thai Bike Man. Yeah,
it's always hard. It's like those like vanity license plates where you're like, what?
So it says Ben is an idiot. So what do you think, Brock? You want to take this one?
All right. Ben is an idiot, .. An idiot savant, that is. Okay, maybe not, but he does provide a ton of great info and isn't afraid to challenge conventional wisdom. I found myself on a similar path to Ben over the past several years, moving away from the extreme endurance events fueled by processed carbs to a diet dominated by real food and striving for a balance between fitness and health. I've enjoyed Ben's insights along the way and have
implemented... That was quite a sentence, by the way.
It was, yeah. It's, it was actually really fun to read because there was no place to stop and take a breath.
That's right.
I've enjoyed Ben's insights along the way and have implemented many of his suggestions. During the podcast, he provides answers to tough questions and overviews of recent research. Ben and Brock keep things entertaining while they educate. Highly recommended! Exclamation point.
You know, the idiot savant thing is interesting because my first exposure to that term was a documentary that I watched when I was a kid where there was this like, he was for all intents and purposes, just like a, you know, a drooling mental retard, pardon the expression, but he was really, really good at playing the piano and he would like get up and play the piano like in the middle of the night. And he had like this horrible singing voice. He was like, but his piano playing was absolutely amazing. And so, when you call me an idiot savant, that's just the image that's coming to mind for me is a drooling idiot who is good at a musical instrument. So anyways, just thought I'd explain my feelings about that. So a little idiot savant thing. But thank you, I think. So that being said, that's going to wrap up this show. And we do have a podcast coming out this weekend.
Do we?
We do have a podcast coming out this weekend, as we do every weekend. This weekend's podcast is actually with this brilliant guy named James Heathers, and we're going to be talking about heart rate variability. I know in the past I've done some HRV episodes with the gals from Sweet Beat, but James has an entirely different perspective, and he's this brilliant dude. So if you're into like self-quantification or you want to learn even more about HRV than you currently know so you can impress even more of your friends at cocktail parties, stay tuned for this weekend's podcast with James Heathers. So
that's awesome. I'm excited about that. I've heard so many podcasts about HRV, but it's generally been Rhonda Collier from Sweet Beat. So this is going to be cool to hear somebody else.
No, James is pretty badass. This is a good one. So check that out. Thanks for listening in. Have a healthy week. Check out the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/319. And I'm going to go, I don't know, run on a treadmill or sit in a sauna or something.
Visit bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.